Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sports Sermon Podcast on the Voice Sports Network. This is not the Voice Sports Network. This is the Voice Podcast Network. It's Parker Houston, the new host of the Sports Sermon. Nick Gavio is abroad. Shout out to Nick. I appreciate all your service. We are here today with Chris Dunn himself.
What's going on, everybody?
Chris Dunn's on a high.
I am. Huge Eagles game. I don't know when you'll be listening to this, but last night, big win for the Birds. We're not going to be talking about the NFL, but this is my chance to gloat a little bit.
We might talk a little bit about the NFL because there's some switching QBs talk that's going to happen.
True.
So, and we have Will the Thrill Shanahan over here. His Sports Sermon debut. Will, say hi to the people.
Yes, that was my nickname when I played football in ages 8 and 9, and I'm very, very glad that it's been brought back right now.
What position did you play, Will?
At that age, I was an outside linebacker and tight end, which was as close to the perimeter as the field of the field as you could get.
Sam or Will?
Well,
you got to be a Will, right?
I was probably a Will.
Okay.
I mean, even at a young age, you could see that my sideline to sideline speed was going to be something that I could.
Did you have a 40 time?
It was probably somewhere mid eights.
Nice. All right. So we are here today to talk about the hot topic that's on everyone's mind, or really was on everyone's mind about a month ago. Alabama, the Crimson Tide. My favorite football team, the team that I rode for last year on this same podcast after Clemson beat them in the national championship game. They have won their rightful title, their rightful claim to being the greatest college football team of this generation. Now, the problem is, however, that UCF has finished the season undefeated, lossless, and some people are saying some things, I would say. There's a lot of talk about maybe UCF deserves the championship. Maybe... you know, maybe they had a parade, I've heard. Maybe Florida Governor Rick Scott shouted out the team, said they were national champions.
Yeah.
So, Dunn, could I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, let me be very clear here to the listeners that I have no pretense of objectivity today. I was born in Orlando. My dad was going to UCF at the time. I am a huge UCF fan, probably the biggest one on campus. I don't think there are too many of them here at Georgetown. and so this was, I mean, an absolutely incredible season for the Knights. They went undefeated, the only team in the country to do that. They had a huge win against Auburn. They had a really fun win against Memphis, fun win against South Florida. And, you know, and like Parker said, they UCF marketing team really did go along with the national championship. My dad owns a UCF national champions T-shirt.
How much it cost?
I don't know how much it cost him, but I think he would have paid just about anything for it. Yeah. So it was fine. They had a parade through Disney World because they're Orlando's hometown team. And yes, Rick Scott did in fact endorse the Knights as national champions. So it's been a fun year to be a Knights fan and right around their win in about a month ago or 3 weeks ago, it was definitely a fun time to be a Knights fan.
Rick Scott hasn't always been a big fan guy, but apparently he's become a fan recently.
Mm-hmm.
Will, your thoughts on the game? I'm assuming you watched it.
I am, and I've been tasked with being the role of objectivity here, considering that both of my partner's fathers are alumni of the two.
Love you, Dad. Roll Tide.
The two schools at hand. I don't know how qualified I am to be in that position because I'm a very passionate sports fan, but I'd love to take up the mantle as just a lover of college football, and both my parents went to schools that are nowhere near Division I.
Fair.
So,
we go to Georgetown.
Yep. Also nowhere near Division I.
In name only. I mean, as far as a football game between Alabama and UCF would have gone, if UCF was deserving, there's a lot to digest there. College football is obviously an imperfect system. I think we can all agree that the four-team playoff is probably better than the BCS system that was in play.
Yeah. We'll get into some stuff later about that, too.
Okay.
So, we see that, at least I read online, that per a guy, Todd Furman, who used to work for Caesar's Palace, he had Bama by 21 if he was doing the odds. Do we think Bama by 21 is a good call? Do we think, Chris Dunn, would you bet UCF in that game?
Bama by 21? Yeah, I would. I would definitely bet that they cover that. I don't know that. I'm not going to... I'm not going to get lured in here into talking about whether or not UCF and Alabama who would win, because they never should have had to play each other, because Alabama shouldn't have made the playoff. Because Alabama lost to Auburn and did not win their conference, as many people here might know and most of our listeners might know. UCF did win their conference and didn't lose to Auburn or anyone for that matter. And so I'm not really interested in, you know, this nonsense about what would have happened if those two teams played.
UCF is the national champions at beating Auburn. That's very true.
Absolutely.
Although Auburn, you could say, was the national champions of beating themselves in that game, arguably.
Maybe. I mean, fair. There's some criticism, but hey, UCF went down there and beat them.
Yeah. Will, Bama by 21. Would you take it?
All right. First off, I don't bet sports for obvious reasons.
Great call. Such a great call.
God, man, I wish I did that.
I'm too invested in them already, and Vegas always wins. And the couple guys that I've contacted have closed their books because they're honorable people. But I don't think Bama would cover that. I don't think Nick Saban beats a lot of football teams by 21 that are like reasonable opponents. Like, obviously Alabama played a much maligned non-conference schedule this year, with the exception of Florida State and the Florida State game.
You could say it's Georgetown-esque, even their non-conference schedule.
Well, to be fair, Florida State was the preseason number 3 before DeAndre Francois went down in that season opening game.
Yep.
But I don't think – and you're looking at their SEC games. We got a one-touchdown win over A&M, one-touchdown win over Mississippi State. And
that's an 8-point win over A&M, by the way. That's a touchdown with a 2-point conversion. I'd like to point that out.
Fair.
Yes, we do not know if Kenny Hill would have came through in that hypothetical. And then, of course, a 12-point loss to Auburn. But I don't think – Alabama, they keep it on the ground. They'll beat you up with their offensive line. And because we didn't see Tua Tagovailoa until the national championship, they're not really an aired-out team despite the strengths of Calvin Ridley. Scott Frost, the quarterback for whisperer for Central Florida, I don't know how well Mackenzie Milton would have – handled that Alabama front. I don't know if
it would have been awful. I know how well it would have been awful.
Yeah, I think it would have been their leading receiver that declared for the NFL draft. I think his name was like Traquan Smith. He would have been, I can say confidently, smothered like peanut butter and jelly by Minka Fitzpatrick.
Nice.
So
illusion there.
I mean, I don't think UCF's gonna put up a whole lot of points, but Scott Frost could probably get tricky with things before he moved on to his alma mater at Nebraska.
Would love to see some trick plays in
that
game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I just don't think Alabama's a football team that really, especially with the Hurts offense and, like, giving a lot of carries to guys like Damian Harris instead of Najee Harris, who also came into play in a time of crisis in the national championship. I don't think they're a team that really puts up 40, 50 points on you, and that's when kind of the 21-point spread, I think, comes into play.
Yeah, Bama only scored 40 points in half their games this season.
Right.
Actually, I was – okay, so
and
they,
those,
against some weak teams.
Those are not
now
impressive. Beating Fresno State 41-10 or beating Colorado State 41-23, I don't think is that impressive.
Yeah, they didn't go over 40 against any ranked opponent.
Colorado State by 18 is not a comfortable enough margin of victory.
No, exactly. It's not. Believe me, I watched that game.
So the idea that Alabama would have beat Colorado State by less than they would have beat UCF seems a little little ridiculous.
I like that. I like that take. So we had a – you just mentioned Tua Tagovailoa. His game was incredible, especially at the end there. 3 touchdown passes in what was just one of the better halves of quarterback play I've seen in a while from college. I can see, though, that the college game, especially towards the end there, turned into a little bit of a game of freshmen. We had Riley Ridley from Georgia, leading receiver. Georgia's leading passer, obviously, was Fromm. Devontae Smith caught one pass but was Alabama's leading receiver. For the touchdown, obviously, 40 yards. Tua, leading passer for Bama. And Najee Harris is a leading rusher for Bama. So that's 5 out of the 6 guys there who were their leading players. What do we think about the future for all these guys?
I mean, I don't know. It's really bizarre to tell. I think it's a lot harder to you know, see recruits in college football than it is in something like college basketball, just because there's so many more players and there's a lot more factors and they stay around a little bit longer. You know, I think Tua was impressive, obviously. I would have to see a lot more than a good half before I can, you know, say where these guys are going. But I think I do want to echo what you said, is that that was like one of the better halves of football you'll ever really watch. And that's just, you know, there's no way to like overstate how difficult of a position he got put in, you know, coming in with, you know, 30 minutes to play, really your only meaningful playing time all year in the national championship against Georgia.
Down 13.
Yeah, like that is unreal that that was a comeback. And so, I mean, if that's the only football he ever plays again, hopefully that's not the case, right. Obviously. I think he, you know, has an impressive resume.
So do we see any quarterback controversies in the horizon for Bama?
Absolutely, because while Tua Tagovailoa, I personally was shocked with the decision to go with him. I thought it might have been a little premature. Brian Daboll, who was the offensive coordinator for Alabama in the national championship game, now offensive coordinator for my mighty Buffalo Bills, he really kind of started airing it out with Tua Tagovailoa, and you just didn't see that with Jalen Hurts. The argument for Jalen Hurts is he is, what is it, 24-2 as starter of Alabama's football team?
Something ridiculous.
I mean, it's tough to argue with that. Does he have an incredible defense that's helping him kind of limit the opposition scoring? Absolutely. But he takes care of the ball very well, and obviously Tua Tagovailoa, with all the excitement, he did throw a pretty horrifying interception.
Yeah, that was the low point of the game.
You thought Georgia was going to pretty much seal the deal right there, but of course they throw a kind of unlucky interception the next play. But there has to be a quarterback controversy next year, because we saw one half of football from a true freshman. Granted, this kid's a five-star recruit. He's a special talent. But with all that Jalen Hurts has done, not to mention he's a great athlete. I wouldn't say he's the passer that Tua Tagovailoa is, but I'd say the way that Alabama want to run their offense, they're going to have a new offensive coordinator next year. Not new, technically. Jason Locksley was promoted from wide receivers coach to be their offensive coordinator for next season. But you have to give Jalen Hurts the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he said in a very retweeted tweet that it's going to be the two of them next year. Nobody's transferring here. There's no Jacob Eason situation. So, I mean, all eyes in college football will be on that battle next season.
I'm looking forward to maybe a wishbone system. I'm thinking two quarterbacks, same time, just direct snap it to one of them.
I mean,
it's worked before.
With all the five stars that Alabama have just in their backfield, you might as well throw three running backs on the field and see what happens.
So, we've seen sort of this trend around the NFL a little bit this year, with Teddy Bridgewater being out for most of the season and Case Keenum taking over for the Vikings.
R.I.P.
Carson Wentz coming out for the Philadelphia Eagles, almost winning an MVP, but coming up just a little bit short. However, Nick Foles has been nothing short of spectacular.
Godlike, honestly.
The starting job. Won me my fantasy league. Greatest white waiver wire pickup I've ever made. Chris, with this recent trend of quarterback play becoming so important in football as a game as a whole, do you think that so much talent is just coming out of the college and high school ranks now that having this quote-unquote elite quarterback doesn't matter because there's enough of them out there?
See, I kind of look at it differently. I think that the days in the – if we're doing the NFL, I think the days of elite quarterbacks being super important are kind of – is kind of over. But not because there's so many good ones. It's because we got used to like an oddly lucky amount. Like, it was weird that at the same time in the league, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Brett Favre, and then Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees were all playing. Like, we got used to that, but that's like an anomaly if you look at the history of the game. Like, there really aren't that many. Every one of those guys is a Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame quarterbacks playing at the exact same time. And so, I don't know. I don't know that it's because there's so many good people coming out. I just think that teams are going to find ways. Like, teams will find ways to win. Teams will find ways to adapt. And, like, I think the fact that Bortles won a playoff game, good UCF alum right there, but Bortles won a playoff game, Keenum won a playoff game, Nick Foles won two playoff games. You know, I think that that's, like, somewhat the future, as much as it may not be fun to think about. It's just the way it is. Defenses are going to adapt, and you're not going to have, like, six Hall of Famers at the same time.
Right. It is interesting. The year after Bortles left UCF, they were actually winless in 2015 without a single win. Is that the biggest turnaround of 2 years in the history of any sport? I guess it's 0-0, right? 0 wins to 0 losses. I guess mathematically that has to be true.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of another team that has done something like that. I mean, like, there have been teams, right, that came very low in their division and came back to win. But to go from 0 wins to undefeated is, I mean, a testament to Scott Frost, honestly.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the year he got there was
unreal.
He started winning.
Yeah. And that's not to disrespect their old coach, George O'Leary. O'Leary was there for about a decade. And he did huge things with the program. He really made that rivalry with USF, which is huge. He did a lot of really good Florida recruiting. And people forget that he and UCF, 2014, only had one loss and beat Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl. And they beat Baylor by, I want to get it wrong, but at least 3 scores they beat Baylor by. And so, you know, that's not to disrespect George O'Leary, but I think that this turnaround, Scott Frost is a genius, right? And so it is what it is that he's leaving. I understand why. I was disappointed, but I totally understand why. But I mean, you can't look at that and not be impressed.
How do you feel about this trend of, I mean, it's always been a trend kind of, but of just, you're going to have a great, or every year or so you'll have a great lower conference team, and they'll come up, they'll be undefeated, one loss, but then their coach leaves the next year. And so what do you do about that program? Is there a way for UCF or a team like Boise State or a team similar to that, part of the P5 schools that, or not P5, G5 schools, that can stay and become like a real program?
Yeah. Well, again, I do want to emphasize a little bit that like the no-win season a couple years ago for UCF was a bit of an anomaly, because they now have 2 New Year's Day wins in the last 5 years, which is more than most programs have. So, you know, I don't want to say that, like, yeah, they are a real program, they're college football blue bloods, because no one is going to buy that, and I don't really believe it. But I do want to say that, like, this is not like a team that came out of nowhere and did this, right? Like, Central Florida is and has been like able to recruit Florida players, which like is one of the first steps to winning college football for quite some time. Is there a way to solve it? I think it's easier for UCF, because selling a job in Orlando with a stadium on campus and in the state of Florida where you can recruit like that, and where they like have a couple of, they're like starting to get names in the NFL. There were 4 alumni playing yesterday. And so like, eventually a coach is going to want to stay. And like, and eventually that'll be what it is. I'm really excited about the coach coming in. I think it's going to be a lot of it. He is an offensive genius. And so, I mean, we'll see. I don't have a perfect answer though.
Okay. Moving on real quick to something else. Most of the arguments for UCF over Alabama come from the 2 Auburn games, right?
Right.
UCF beat Auburn 34-27, obviously in their final bowl game. Now Alabama lost 26-14 to Auburn. How do we feel about the idea of the transitive property in college football? Is it valid with 3 variables? Is it valid with 4? How far do we have to go?
Right. It's fun to do. I think it's valid. I do want to point out that, you know, it is obviously like a little ex post facto to say, oh, see, we beat Auburn, who you couldn't beat, which obviously I said a lot, and I stand by that. I think the playoff committee did themselves no favor by putting UCF against Auburn, because – or did themselves really no favor. Yeah. Because if you know that people are, like, going to complain no matter what, then whatever. But, like, if you're trying to limit those complaints, then having UCF play Auburn is just is literally begging to look stupid.
Yeah.
And that happened. And so why UCF wasn't in another bowl game against a team from the Big Ten that, like, didn't, you know, like, why
UCF wasn't playing Wisconsin. Would have been a great game. Yeah.
But, like, literally, why UCF wasn't playing Wisconsin, I don't understand, because also you had the fun, like, Scott Frost is going to Nebraska, like, I'll see you next year narrative. All that, like, would have been fun. But I couldn't be happier, because we just beat Auburn and it makes it a lot easier to look. But, you know, I don't know that there's, like, a certain number of degrees that it's good for. I think. I use it when it benefits my team and I don't when it doesn't. And like, I think every fan does that. And I'm like willing to admit that.
Will, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, UCF, the committee was basically putting all their chips in on Auburn beating UCF.
Yeah.
Because if Auburn beats UCF, then it's like Auburn wasn't even the strongest non
right.
Power Five
playoff yeah. uh-huh. maker team. Right. Uh-huh. And so if Auburn beats UCF, then it's like, well, UCF wasn't really – like, they shouldn't have been there. Because the committee knew exactly what they were doing from midseason when it kind of started to emerge around week 7 or 8 that UCF was going to be one of the mm-hmm. last unbeaten teams and they had a realistic shot of doing it the whole year. The committee pretty much strategically placed them in, like, the lower teens of the college yeah. football rankings. So even if a couple dominoes fell in the top 5, UCF would never be able to crawl – into the top four.
Mm-hmm. And that was what was not to interrupt you. That's something that really, like, if you read the UCF fan message boards, like whatever else, mm-hmm. that was what really bothers people.
Great reading, by the way.
Great reading. I no comment as to how many hours I've spent on them. That's what really like gets people going is like, you know, once we put up, we beat Austin Peay. Now granted, it's Austin Peay, but 73-33, right? You're undefeated. That was the last game of October. You just put up 73 points on a team. Like, You probably shouldn't be ranked 21. Mm-hmm. That's like when you want to, like, you got to start wondering because, you know, you knew what they were doing. And I think also, just sorry, I completely interrupted you, Will. But when Will said that they were banking on UCF playing Auburn, or I'm sorry, losing to Auburn, I think they were also kind of like, oh, well, there's a good chance they're going to lose to South Florida, which they almost did, mm-hmm. or like lose to Memphis, which that game went in double overtime. And so, like, Their schedule was very bottom heavy anyway, and so I understand somewhat of the argument of like, yeah, well, through the first few months, you know, UCF played nobody, which is fair enough, but you know, they now have 3 wins over ranked opponents, but mm-hmm. you're not going to make like a 7 team jump in the final week, even if you do win your conference, even if you do beat a ranked team in Memphis, it's not going to happen, and that really upset a lot of fans. Mm-hmm.
Do we lend any credence to the theory that because Alabama beat Clemson and then Clemson beat Auburn by less or more than UCF beat Auburn?
No.
That's the transitive property also, technically.
Right.
There's an extra little wrinkle there.
Like I said, I only use it when it favors my team. No, the idea that like the Clemson beating Auburn by 1 point more than UCF beat Auburn, therefore Clemson's better than UCF and Clemson like and Alabama beat Clemson is like a ridiculous, ridiculous thing.
Well, because didn't the Georgetown football team by like the transitive property, they're like the 11th degree, their only win of the season against the vaunted Campbell Tigers.
Campbell Camels.
Campbell – are they the Camels?
They're the Camels.
I guess you kind of really got to search around the bargain bin for nicknames when you're that mm-hmm. far down the pecking order. The Georgetown was, like, in the college football playoff for, like,
Georgetown beat Alabama, actually, per that. I'm going
to – just a quick shout-out to myteamisbetterthanyourteam.com. Yep. That's where we're getting all of this. Mm-hmm. It's
not
a lot
a sponsor
of fun.
Yet.
Not a sponsor yet, but if you're listening, we would love to sponsor us. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have it's actually not that crazy far. It's 11 schools away. So Georgetown beat Campbell, the Campbell Camels, who beat Dayton, who then beat Southeast Missouri State. Southeast Missouri State beat Tennessee Tech, who beat Tennessee State, who beat Georgia State, who beat South Alabama, who beat Troy, who really, this is the one that links
yeah,
it together.
Yeah, this is the huge jump.
Troy beating LSU, which was absurd at the time and is still crazy. Then LSU beating Auburn, and of course Auburn beating Alabama. So that's it's just a little fun thing you can do on the internet there. Everyone go check that website out. Although anytime that Auburn loses, I'm pro that. So still seeing UCF beat Auburn was I had some solace. So we just talked about UCF not getting in. What are you guys' opinions on Alabama making it to the playoff? Do you think that it's obviously they showed that they deserve to be in the playoff?
Yeah, hindsight.
But at the time,
2020 there.
At the time was our foresight 2020.
So, yeah, the question's obviously resume then. Honestly, talking about it's more recency bias with Alabama because their loss to Auburn came at a tough time for them where they were ranked the number one team in the country heading into the last week of the regular season, the Iron Bowl, of course, rivalry weekend, and losing to Auburn there, that's just going to drop a team. And then since it happened so so soon to like when the playoffs, what teams were in, were decided. Mm-hmm. That kind of made it seem like, oh, Alabama might be like the one left out. But I mean, Alabama's resume is strong. The SEC West, SEC West was down this year, no
East,
doubt about it.
I thought you said West.
SEC West was weak this year compared to like all it's cooked up to be. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Alabama losing one game, their toughest non-Auburn regular season opponent was, I mean, you could say Mississippi State.
LSU or Mississippi State, yeah. Really.
Which is weak. So, but the way the committee set things up, it was either going to be Alabama or Ohio State, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then...
Well, it came down to the same logic that they took Ohio State last year over Penn State for,
mm-hmm.
which was that if you're a two-loss conference champion, we're going to take a one-loss non-conference champion from another conference. So, to me, if they wouldn't have taken Alabama, that just would have shown, I mean... They would have just been shouting at Ohio State, basically. They would have been like, hey, we love Ohio State. They can get in, however, whatever the logic is. Now, I do understand that year, I think Ohio State had a little bit better of a strength of schedule than Alabama did last
year. Yeah, I mean,
year.
That year, Ohio State had lost by whatever, one or two. It was like by a field goal to Penn State, which was a fifth-ranked, sixth-ranked team.
Something like that.
Before they lost the Rose Bowl. And yeah, I mean, I think...
However, this year they lost by 31 to Iowa.
Ohio State should not have been there because you can't let Iowa put up 55 points on you and make the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. Like that is why I think that even when it comes to like applying these rules of like a two-loss conference winner or whatever else, like that's true. You can't Ohio State was never going to make it because you can't let Iowa score 55 points on you. I think it is a little of the case of like, yeah, well, we know in hindsight, right, that UCF beat Auburn, who beat Alabama. Mm-hmm. But I made the claim that they should have been in there either way. Mm-hmm. And we know in hindsight that Alabama won the whole thing, and I totally understand that. But I do think that there's something to be said that if you want to make the college football playoff, you can't lose by 12 points to another SEC team in the final week of the season. Fair.
So you think UCF should have been in the game? Final Four.
Yeah.
Well,
I think if you win your conference and are undefeated, you should be in
regardless of the conference.
Regardless of the conference.
So if Troy had won the Sun Belt this year.
Sure.
Okay. Will, your take?
I don't buy it, frankly. I think that UCF just didn't have looking at their schedule, they just don't pass the eye test.
If they beat more ranked teams in the regular season than Alabama did, we should point out.
Well, more ranked teams finally, right?
Yeah, but South Florida and Memphis were both ranked at the time when UCF beat them.
Are they finally? Were they ranked?
And they're both finally ranked.
Okay.
UCF's wins, though, are just – they're like one possession wins, really. It's like
– in some of them.
I mean, Navy by 10 on the road is – Navy's actually a sneaky good football team every single season.
Navy's like the Houston Rockets. Like, running the option is basically
– Yeah, like – like,
you could either be great or trash.
Basically teach a defense how to play against the triple option in the week before. So, like, that's kind of ridiculous in my opinion. But, yes, I will make the argument that their schedule going into the playoff was as impressive, if not more, than Alabama's.
I wonder what the statistics on – strength of schedule are for them.
Yeah, because I mean they're not. It's not like they played a joke schedule. Is all I want to point out.
No, they didn't.
They played ranked teams.
It was kind of funny. It's not like a whole joke though.
It's just because
of their conference.
You beat up on Cincinnati or East Carolina. You know, whatever. I think those are fine joke wins. But I don't know, beating you did beat South Florida on the road, your rival school, who was ranked at the time and ranked. Now you beat Memphis. That was at home, but still beat a number 25 now ranked Memphis. They were ranked at the time 21 maybe.
Right.
I don't know. Those are nothing.
I just looked some stats up real quick, and the average margin of victory on the season of a UCF opponent was -0.8 points, and the average margin of victory of an Alabama opponent on the season was 5.46 points. So that'll be Alabama's is 22nd out of 130, which is really low for an SEC team.
Right.
And UCF's is 75th out of 130, which is actually pretty high
given the conference they play in.
Mm-hmm. Well, the American Athletic actually had a good season. this year.
Yeah, as in general.
By all regards. There were some competitive football teams in there. To think that USF, Charlie Strong, and I mean, obviously, you can't say enough about Quentin Flowers. He's an absolute animal.
Mm-hmm.
But that they didn't even make the conference championship. And then, first off, you have that one possession thriller, and then you have the double overtime game against Memphis in the conference
championship. That was so much fun.
That's great exposure for the conference, man, that was really trying to get on its feet after the whole realignment shakeup.
Yeah, the American couldn't be happy about anything because they lost, you know, Houston lost their coach. It mm-hmm. could have been a much worse season than it was. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, like, I mean, having UCF go undefeated and beating Auburn on New Year's Day is like
probably the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, as perfect as it could happen for the conference. Mm-hmm. But also, like you said, like, there are a lot of very good football teams in there.
Mm-hmm. So do we think that the current P5, G5 situation, notwithstanding, that any G5 team can make the playoff as it's currently structured, regardless if they go undefeated, if they beat everyone by 40?
Well, now it's kind of like we're calling out the committee for not giving them a fair shake, because mm-hmm. with the whole deal with not ranking UCF high enough early enough,
mm-hmm.
and so you never really gave them a fair shot. Now I think the committee, there's pressure on the committee to prove that they're not like this just like major conference money grabbing, like doing everything for the ratings type group. And I mean, I think next year, if there's a group of five team that, first off, I don't think there will be a group of five team next year or probably in the next few years that'll have as strong a resume as UCF did right. for the college football playoff. But if there's one that goes undefeated, there will be pressure on the committee to, because everybody wants to see, everybody loves March Madness, even if you're right. not a college basketball mm-hmm. fan. It's all the excitement of this low level, like mid-major team beating mm-hmm. one of the heavyweights.
Mm-hmm.
And so people want to see that in football. And it's not just like, oh, these four like power conference teams. And so I think there's going to be pressure on the committee. And I think whether deserved or not, I think you're going to see some group of five teams kind of be placed a little bit higher. Now, whether they can go to the wire and how they do in the playoff, that remains to be seen. But I don't think any group of five team in the next few years is going to have a strong resume as UCF did this
What's
year.
What's actually interesting is that the College Football Playoff Committee itself actually has three members who are representatives from G5 schools, and actually one member who's representative of a Division II school. They have the former head coach of University of Southern Mississippi, Jeff Bauer, Herb, I'm going to butcher his last name, Deromedi, who was the old coach at Central Michigan, and then Chris Howard, who's actually the president of Robert Morris University. So they are pretty well represented as far as, and that's out of 10 members, there's three. So they are actually pretty well represented on the committee. Dunn, do you think that maybe the only way that a school like UCF gets in again, or gets in at all, would be to just schedule three ridiculous out-of-conference opponents?
Yeah, and I don't think that the out-of-conference opponents will do it. Like, why, yep. why would you, if you are an Alabama, well, Alabama never schedules strong out-of-conference people.
Well, except for the first game, yeah.
That's actually no. I will give you that. That this year
we always try to kick off with a good one.
Yeah, but this year especially, you know, that was a fun.
Florida State was a weird situation.
Very bizarre. Supposed to be. But in general, I mean, if you're really any looking to be a top 15 team, there's really no incentive to schedule UCF because you're gonna have to pay them to come and mm-hmm. there's a good chance they win. Like you now know that they're a good team, so there's mm-hmm. a good chance they win. And so, I mean, I think obviously what we've seen is either they're just never going to be able, like either a G5 school will never be able to make it in, or they will have to have such an impressive resume that I don't even know that it's like I don't think it's really possible to like for a G5 school to like, you know,
yeah.
beat two top 15 teams in a season. Yeah,
and they need like a 30-point margin of victory,
right?
And UCF's was 18.
Yeah, I mean, UCF had an impressive margin of victory, but yeah. like you know, it's just like I can't. I'm with Will here, and then I can't really think of a situation where a team would have a more impressive resume than the Knights had this year, and so I'm not sure that they'll ever be able to have one.
I do think that UCF could have at least gotten one major conference school on their schedule. I mean, Boise State had done that for years.
Right.
Every single year, almost they got somebody. Most of the times, it was Oregon.
Yep.
But schools like that, there are schools out there who are looking to play these G5 schools because they think it's more of an easy win than you know, the rest of the college football fandom.
Well, now everybody's scared because of what happened to LSU. They got embarrassed at their homecoming by Troy, and Troy's a Sun Belt team. They're not anywhere near being a like a college football playoff contender. So I think if you're a power conference team, you're kind of scared off by like scheduling like the UCFs and the Navies of the world. I think that you're more incentivized to schedule other Power 5 teams in your non-conference play. So it's like, knock anything, but don't knock my strength of schedule when it's all said and done. Because I think they just, when, if you're a team that's looking to get into the college football playoff, you want to be able to have that in your back pocket, that you had a strong strength of schedule. And if you can pull out those tough non-conference games, all of a sudden you're sitting pretty. And we all know that early season results are so important to like laying the foundation for a college football playoff ready resume before those initial rankings come out from the committee.
So with all that said, there's been a lot of talk about playoff system reform in the wake of all this happening. The obvious guess is to go to eight teams. You got five major conferences. You can do two at large and take one team from G5. That's what's been thrown around the most. Some people are pro conference realignment in this case, to just make eight conferences, have like an essentially a 16, a tournament of 16, because you'd have eight conference championships. But there's a lot of ways to go about fixing what we all agree probably is an imbalance in college football. Dunn, if you had 5 minutes with Frank Beamer of the College Football Playoff Committee, what would you tell him?
Right. This is tough, especially because there's so many financial interests that will like that oppose these things. So like, obviously there's so much like structural financial interest in the current conferences that it's going to be, it's like no one really wants to change that. And also, you know, I think that whenever people talk about like, oh, make it an 18 playoff, get rid of one of those joke games in the beginning, is somewhat unfair for the teams that play those quote unquote joke games. Because for a team like Troy, when they went to LSU, I would have to imagine a significant portion of their budget comes from playing those kind of games, right? And so you're really saying like, screw you to the lowest teams, so that way the, you know, middle of the pack teams can get a better shot. And so I understand it's tough, but I mean, I think the only way you can really justify doing, like the only way that, I mean, no one's ever going to be happy, because if there's eight, then the number 19 will be upset.
And they don't want to do 16.
I get it. I really do. But I think that having only four when there are literally, like, you call five Power 5 conferences is tough. And so I think maybe you could even do six.
Two byes.
Everybody gets winner of all conferences make it and an at-large, something like that.
Or winner of G5 makes it. The G5 team with the best record.
Yeah.
Call that one conference essentially.
I could get with that, because I'd be upset if five teams make it and like the sixth team is a two loss in the conference championship
right.
or sport. Uh-huh. Do they deserve that last at large? So I'm not sure.
Some years you don't really have a great G5 team either.
But also some years, like, you know, you have bad winners of the P5 conference.
True,
like,
absolutely.
Like, Pac-12, there are some bad years.
Oh, yeah.
When, like,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
You're just like, who the hell even?
Yeah, this year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's an interesting point. So that would have looked like this year, if we were to do that, we would have had, help me out here, we would have had Clemson 1.
Clemson would have been 1. I think.
Oklahoma 2, Georgia 3, Alabama 4, let's say, and then Ohio State 5, UCF 6.
That's what I would have liked. There's no promise that would have even happened. But
right. And then we would have seen, we would have assumedly seen Georgia UCF.
Right.
Which would have been a fun one, I think. And then Bama versus Ohio State in a rematch of that. And then the winners of that would have gone on to play.
Right.
The two top seeds being Oklahoma and Clemson. I think that's a lot of ad money, actually.
Sure.
If you have two extra games, there is some financial interest in holding an extra couple playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, ESPN would love it.
Oh, yeah.
ESPN definitely. Would love it.
Definitely.
It's also just like, you know, are we going to now move rivalry week back a weekend? Are we going to have one less week in between your first playoff game? Because, like, you don't want to have the playoff games where, like, the all the other random bowls are going on, right?
Right. Yeah, we'd have to do like a second set of New Year's bowls.
Almost. Exactly. Yeah, and so that would be bizarre. And I know that like the New Year's bowls already like are kind of an institution, mm-hmm. and like they're kind of getting played into the playoff, but like it's still kind of bizarre because sometimes you have a Rose Bowl that doesn't have a Big Ten team. That's weird, mm-hmm. and stuff.
The best Rose Bowl of all time, Georgia Oklahoma this year, SEC yeah. versus Big 12.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean. There's no, I mean, obviously the theme here is that there's no easy pick. Yeah. But
Will, you got any thoughts?
Well, I think everything becomes more feasible if we just cut down on the number of ridiculous bowls that are already
that's
played.
Also
hey, man, shout out to the Tax Slayer
like,
Bowl, by the way.
The mm-hmm. whole mm-hmm. month of December. Like, you should not be a 5-7 football team.
Beefo Brady's Bowl, sponsor us.
You should not be a 6-6 football team that's playing in a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes to those things.
It's embarrassing. It really is.
Like, the best players are sitting out from Power 5 teams because mm-hmm. they just want to improve their draft stock and stay healthy. It's just another opportunity for players to get hurt and... Honestly, the greatest source of money comes from, like, Tax Slayer paying, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, $50,000 to put their name on the – or Beefo Brady's to put $50,000. Because nobody – they're not getting any money from people going through the turnstiles. I mean,
no, they're always empty stadiums because it's, like, December 27th in, like, some, like, gross temperature. It's really weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
In, like, a weird city.
My favorite thing, though, is, like, college football and basketball coaches talking about, like – players these days get like participation trophies or whatever. Like some 7-5 team is like marching around with a Tax Slayer Bowl trophy as if that isn't right. a participation trophy.
Florida State was 5-6 this year yeah. against accredited institutions yeah. and 1-0 against unaccredited institutions, and they still made a bowl game.
Yeah, like a couple of years ago, 2013, I think Notre Dame was 7-5 and like mm-hmm. beat. I forget who they. I don't even know who they won, but they won, like, the Pinstripe Bowl. And it's like, this doesn't, right. like, this doesn't matter. Like, this is so stupid.
I've never seen a commercial for Tax Slayer or Beefo Brady's. I have no idea what those companies are. I wonder if it's money laundering going on. The Fiesta Bowl was known for money laundering, big money laundering bowl.
It was so much better when it was the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, true. That's true, right?
Most accurate.
It's really
that,
tragic.
That's actually that's the only thing I believe that I've said today. Wipe away everything else. The Fiesta Bowl should always be sponsored by Tostitos.
And just get rid of the rest of the sponsorships, honestly.
Yeah. Yep.
Didn't that just want to make you, like, just, like, take a bag of scoops on the couch?
Just and just go right
fill
at
them up with some salsa,
just, like,
you know?
Watch some college football.
Watch Blake Bortles run up on that Baylor defense. Yeah, no, start chewing
nobody,
away on them.
Nobody in this game has to win the national championship. Just enjoy some chips, and we'll watch, like, couple NFL draft prospects, couple intriguing storylines, but no consequences.
No.
That was one of the better bowls, like historically too. The Fiesta Bowl every year was just churning out.
Oh,
like it was
absolutely.
The G5 team was always in there.
The
like
Boise
the
State Fiesta Bowl win
over Oklahoma.
Like, yeah, it's like the uh-huh. greatest college football game.
But one of them at least.
Yeah, no, yeah, I should uh-huh. say one of because uh-huh. now I'm thinking of like 10
nah,
examples.
There's too many. To count.
I'm thinking of so many other examples, but that's like one of the greatest college football games that ever mm-hmm. happened.
So. Let's get into a little bit of what UCF has been doing after the season. Because some people have called it heresy. I would stop at blasphemy, I think, is about as far as I would go.
I would say it's like the purest thing you can do in college football. Like there's such a long history of teams declaring, like there's such a long history of teams declaring themselves national champions. Like Alabama has a bunch of like random declared that they called, they like declared but, after the fact. Mm-hmm. Like, this is...
In, like, the 40s. Like,
no,
before
yeah.
they had polls.
Sure. Well, okay, they had polls at the time, but they...
Well, yeah, but, like, two guys sure. wrote it in a newspaper.
But what,
like,
what I'm getting at is here that this is a... They're acting in a proud tradition of college football of declaring yourself the national champion.
Well, it's just a kind of ridiculous tradition. I don't know. I mean, you can be upset with, like, the format because that's out of your hands. But UCF declaring themselves national champion... I'd rather just, like, they have a chip on their shoulder and, like, they use it as, like, maybe tack something up in the locker room. It's like, we should have been. But, like, the whole, like, the parade and then,
oh,
like,
it's great.
The billboards. It's like, I don't know. It's like, get over yourselves,
it's also
guys.
Also genius marketing.
How much money that could have gone to financial aid for students was spent on that
How much money that could have gone to financial aid for students was spent on the entire college football season every year?
Like, that's such a great point.
Like, sure, I agree with you there, but, like, come on.
Let's bring it back to the fact that college sports, as they are currently structured, is not a good institution in any shape.
Oh, no, absolutely. I hate myself when I watch it.
Great game, though.
Oh, God. Love it. Love it.
So there's apparently a 160-page book about UCF season that's available on the OrlandoSentinel.com. For the small price of $25, you, our listeners, can have a book called Perfect Nights. Now, this book is a coffee table book, it looks like, for those of you who have coffee tables out there. Hardcover, full color. The ad on here says, get the book that captures the UCF Knights' historic undefeated season and triumph over SEC powerhouse Auburn. No, not a powerhouse.
They beat Alabama.
In the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. An advertisement for the book says, this 160-page hardcover book features stories and photos from the award-winning sports writers and photographers of the Orlando Sentinel. Now, if we weren't already convinced of UCF's ridiculous fandom, I think the 160-page book has got to convince us at some point, right? I mean, I'm sure there's a whole spiel in there about how they deserve the championship.
The Orlando Sentinel wants to make money. Sports journalism, tough industry. Mm-hmm, so, true. You know, as we say in the biz, you know, make money when you can. Don't do that at The Voice at all.
No. No sponsors.
If anybody would like to sponsor this podcast, please, for the love of God. But, I mean, that's just, like, typical. Someone's, like, every year when they have the win of the Super Bowl as, you know, the coffee table book, it's the same thing here.
True. So, to wrap up, I guess, we have next year to look forward to in college football. Another great year of exploitation of student-athletes.
the best.
How do we feel about the future of this great game? I know there's been some safety concerns thrown around. Do we see a great future for the NCAA, especially as it comes to football, or even just like next year? Who do you think is going to win the championship?
Those are two very different
Very different questions.
Okay. Uh-huh. College football is like this weird, super bizarre thing where like it's a bunch of people my age playing this sport that millions of people are watching, and they like, it's goofy and weird things happen. And every now and then a UCF team comes along, and I love it more than anything. And I hate the NCAA. Like, I think, and like, I almost hate that I love college football, because I'm like these guys are just like, not so much money is getting made by these guys to like give each other concussions, and they're not seeing any of it. And like, that really is like sad. I don't know that like, I'm going to say like, oh, it's all going to go burning down in the next 5 years, or like everyone's going to stop playing football. I don't know that that's true. I think there's going to have to be some kind of long-term fundamental change to the way everything goes. And I think that Alabama's going to win next year.
I would agree with all of that, actually, especially the ending part.
Yeah. Well, doesn't it seem like the more tarnished like an institution gets, like the better just the stuff it cooks up like is? Like, look at the NFL this year.
It's like that cast iron pan.
The NFL cook, like, has just been
on, and it's just disgusting.
Right, yeah. The NFL has just been getting rained like balls of fury from like every corner of like opinion about whether you want to talk about the kneeling, whether you want to talk about the concussions, and the games have just been incredible. Like, and it's the same thing with college football. It's like, the more we want to not support it, it's like the better product it's offering. And I still think the concept of like 18 to 21 year old kids playing on this enormous stage in front of millions of people is incredible. It's fantastic. But obviously, once you do a little bit of digging, and obviously you look at the medical research, there are issues that we need to talk about, despite how what a fun ride it's been on these last couple seasons with the playoff as a college football fan.
Yeah, the movie Concussion did not do a lot of convincing people. I'd like to point that out. Will Smith and his accent did not do very much to change the American zeitgeist on that issue. So on that somewhat sad note, but hopeful for the future, I'd like to say goodbye to you guys. My name is Parker Houston. You can find me on Twitter at Parker W. Houston. Chris, if you could drop your info down there.
Follow me on Twitter at @get_IR_Dunn, D-U-N-N. It's a lot of fun. It's been a lot of Eagles tweets lately.
And Will?
I don't know who's going to win the national championship next year, but,
Hot take. First one. We're actually going to play that next year if Alabama doesn't win at the beginning of our episode.
Well,
I'm strapped in.
He's strapped in.
I'll be on my couch with bag of Tostito scoops.
Can't think of a better way to close it out. All right, thanks so much, guys, and we'll see you next time.